Thank you, Gene, and thanks everybody for choosing this session. There are a lot of options over this few day period, so it's great we have a group here. So the introduction, I think, said a lot about the organization. We were founded in 1977. We're a 501c3 organization, membership driven, which means we have tremendous political freedom and courage because we have thousands and thousands of people across North America moving the organization forward and giving us the resources we need to do our work. I think so, through the right click? Yeah, okay. So, thank you. So the organization is fortunate to be in official relations with the World Health Organization, with UNESCO, and with the Secretariat to the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control. So what I want to talk about today is how we can use a grassroots organizing model to build international networks to actually bring about regulatory change, which I think is something that as a public health community, we don't often see that it can be done because it takes a lot of time and really good community-based organizing to make it happen. But working across international borders, the power that we have to move international agencies like the UN, any part of the UN, to bring about enforceable change is really possible. So Corporate Accountability International started its work on tobacco in 1993. And if you think about why, as an organization whose focus is to stop life-threatening abuses by transnational corporations, why would we choose tobacco? Supremely obvious. Tobacco is responsible for the largest preventable health epidemic in the world. We are expected to see up to 1 billion deaths this century from tobacco-related illnesses unless current trends continue. Fortunately, the Global Tobacco Treaty, which we'll talk about a little bit more in a minute, provides a framework for dramatically affecting that. What this number means, the 5.5 million people a year who die from tobacco, every 6 seconds, somebody in the world is dying from a tobacco-related illness. That's enormous, but it's the kind of thing we can actually stop. And I think the presentation in the beginning actually spoke to how we can, in fact, use what we need to do to actually prevent those deaths. When you look at the global tobacco epidemic, it's important to understand the source of the epidemic. The tobacco industry, led by British American Tobacco, Philip Morris International, and Japan Tobacco, have used sort of three overarching strategies over the past 50 years. The targeting of children and women, seeking aggressive international market expansion. So as smoking rates had leveled out in a number of developed countries, they looked internationally to where they could bring in new smokers. And then also looking at the way that tobacco transnationals undermine public health policies, oftentimes setting those policies directly. So when we launched our campaign in 1993, we set out to do three major things. Stop the tobacco industry from addicting new customers around the world, to stop the tobacco industry from manipulating public policy in the interest of profits, and then finally to decrease the ability and the incentive that tobacco transnationals have to spread tobacco addiction around the world. Remember back in 1993, I don't know how many folks smoked back then, but certainly lots and lots of public health officials or public health workers or community organizers were smoking. You wouldn't think that taking on tobacco control in the early 90s was a liberal or progressive issue. So we had a huge job to do to shift the public climate here in the United States so that the public health community would be able to take the lead and we'd be able to move communities in this country to protect and prevent the growing international epidemic. So it was a big challenge. I remember talking to folks that we'd been working with, you know, for the past 20 years who thought, why are you taking on tobacco? It's so uncool. It's like, well, this isn't really about being cool. This is about saving lives. So it took a number of years to really shift that. And 3 or 4 years into the campaign, we had the privilege of being at the World Health Organization's, one of the initial meetings that they convened in British Columbia that said about the concept that the WHO could use the authority that it has to establish internationally legally binding health policy, to actually use that power for the first time. So it took a tremendous amount of courage by the then Director General, Gro Harlem Brundtland, who is a pediatrician from Norway. And she said, look, there's something that we can do here. So let's flex our muscles. But in order to do that, not only would we have to shift the public climate in the US, but to shift the public climates and the perceptions around tobacco control in many parts of the world. Not only with the general public, so that we could shift the impression that our government officials had, but also breaking the world essentially into the 6 regions that the WHO uses, figuring out the best ways to affect those regions. So we were then asked by WHO in 1998 to put together a research paper on how non-governmental organizations could be used to bring about some of the change that was necessary to put in place a global tobacco treaty. So we were then essentially mandated, having done this research, to build the first international network in favor of the global tobacco treaty. So the Network for Accountability of Tobacco Transnationals was convened in the late 90s. A few years later, the Framework Convention Alliance was also born. But there's some important differences between these two networks. So with NAT, the international network that corporate accountability group, we looked across sectors. So we looked at NGOs with a variety of missions. They weren't just public health or public health affiliated organizations. These were women's rights groups. They were faith-based groups. They were student groups, environmental groups, other corporate accountability organizations. So it was a broad-based collection of organizations in over 65 countries, and over 100 different NGOs were participating. When the Framework Convention Alliance was formed, a few years later, what they did was take a more mainstream approach, bringing in public health groups. So through these two broad networks that operated in terms of really pushing the WHO and the WHA member nations to bring the treaty about, it meant that we have essentially the entire NGO sector included. And again, using a model where we work in the regions that WHO has in place. So a lot of this organizing happened in between 3 and 6 different languages. And that was one of the reasons that having so many organizations from so many different countries was essential, so that we could bring together people and communicate effectively. The network, you really have to ask yourself, how could you possibly bring in such a wide range of organizations? So we worked very carefully identifying potential leaders, so organizations from each of these WHO regions who would become part of the secretariat, to then institute, the overarching commitment was to institute effective controls on tobacco transnationals, and to then help position these organizations to further pursue global standards to hold these corporations, not just the tobacco industry, but many corporations accountable for their life-threatening activities. So we agreed to a common set of principles. We articulated what we call the gold standard, meaning all the elements that we wanted to see included in the Global Tobacco Treaty. And even though we might disagree on different pieces of the missions or the organizing approaches of these organizations, we all agreed to a common platform. So that was absolutely essential. The range of tactics then, being very clear about what the objectives and the mission was of the network, it meant that we could really build on the strengths that each of these organizations brought to the table. And so the range of tactics that we were able to use to help move the government officials locally and to help move the World Health Assembly and the World Health Organization, we pretty much had all of the specific tactics covered. So did a lot of constituency-based organizing and outreach, not only in the specific country, so in Brazil, in Zambia, in England, in New Zealand, really all across the world, in Turkey. We could also get to all of the powerful constituencies that had access to decision-making in those countries. We also, I don't know how many of you do international organizing, it is much easier to get international media coverage that's accurate outside of the US than it is here in the US. And when you work with the WHO in Geneva, they have a fantastic press corps. They're bright and they're committed to conveying these broad messages of public health. So the media coverage through the network's just been absolutely phenomenal. We also built a real strong powerhouse that was able to lobby government officials. We did tremendous training and production of organizing materials, and again, in a number of languages. And then the one of the things that sort of wove everything together and continues to do that is our overall commitment to directly exposing and challenging the tobacco industry. It requires a lot of courage in some of these countries, but knowing that you have 100 other organizations around the world doing the same thing really emboldened a lot of these NGOs. And then ongoing monitoring and research of the industry, and monitoring what tactics were working, where the pitfalls were, and sharing the information with one another. So, you know, watch out for British American Tobacco because they're going to try to buy off your best government official. Watch out for Japan Tobacco because they might try to give you a better price on your export crops of tobacco, and then they won't come through with it. So those kinds of things were really important to share. In terms of the Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, so it is the first public health and corporate accountability treaty that has been established. 171, it says here, it's actually 172 parties have now ratified the Global Tobacco Treaty. And it says parties rather than nations because the European Union ratified the treaty as well. So the treaty itself was adopted by the World Health Assembly in May of 2003. And then very quickly, more than 100 countries moved to adopt the treaty. They didn't take the step of ratification, but that meant that by the end of February of 2005, the treaty took effect as international law. This is one of the, if you just look at treaties across the board, any treaty-making agency or system, this is one of the treaties that was the fastest to move from the books to becoming international law. And I think that that really speaks to the testament of not only some of the government champions, the commitment at WHO, but all of these NGOs from around the world who are committed to seeing this through to save lives. We know, remember in the beginning we talked about the potential loss of life due to ongoing tobacco use. If this treaty is implemented and enforced, this could save up to 200 million lives by the year 2050, and that's an estimate from the World Health Organization. So what does this treaty do? From our perspective as a corporate accountability organization that, you know, really seeks to establish public health, human rights, and environmental protections, the opening line to this treaty, this is not in place in any other international legal framework. It says that public health shall be the priority. Public health is a greater priority than trade and commercial interests. Like, let that sink in. That is huge. And most of us, certainly in this country, have no idea what that means. But it gives us the mandate to go out and campaign and organize on broad public health and gives us an actual legal framework from which to build additional public health movements. So it is huge. It does a lot of other good things too. Bans tobacco advertising, promotion, and sponsorship. Prevents interference by tobacco corporations in public health policy. So imagine what it would be like to be able to sit down, articulate public health policy, and not have the tobacco industry interfering with it. For any of you that have tried to do that in the past, you know that that's virtually impossible. In this treaty, there is a provision that says the tobacco corporations shall not be allowed to create public health policy. Again, that imagine the precedents that sets for other public health work. It also holds the tobacco corporations liable for the harms they cause. That means you cause this mess, you pay for cleaning it up. Think about economies that have been completely tanked by the global tobacco epidemic or by the epidemics, the healthcare costs in their countries. This is a fantastic way for some of these countries to recover costs. Demands smoke-free public places, increases tobacco taxes, requires large graphic warning labels on tobacco products. So I don't know how many of you have ever seen, for example, the Canadian cigarette packs. They're scary. But if that was in place everywhere, most 9, 10, 15-year-olds wouldn't be drawn to smoking, right? Especially if they weren't being marketed to all the time. The tobacco treaty also combats illicit tobacco trade, which is another important way that the tobacco industry pushes global tobacco addiction. We brought copies, not that many, but a few copies of the treaty. You can pick one up here in the back. If you haven't seen it before, regardless of the work that you do for public health, thank you, you should really pick this up and take a look at it. The opportunities there for applying what's been built are enormous. In terms of strategies that we've used to advance a treaty, they sort of fall into four key areas. Education and grassroots mobilization, leadership development, so on-the-ground leadership development, neutralizing, meaning exposing and challenging the tobacco industry, and then broader coalition building. So you're part of an international network, but then in your own countries, what kind of coalition can you build as well? We don't have time to go through what we mean by each of these four strategies, so I'm going to slip on through. We bring people together regularly. You can see in this picture, we have folks from Kenya, Nigeria, India, the US, and Colombia, but to learn from one another. I want to get to the end. Yay! This was when, after one of the conferences of the parties to the tobacco treaty. Of course, building a powerful international network means the tobacco industry is going to be fighting you every step of the way. But where are we today with the Global Tobacco Treaty? So I said 172 parties have ratified this treaty. Two of the most populated countries that have not yet ratified are Indonesia and our very own United States. So under the Bush administration, they signed the treaty, and then they sent it over to the State Department and locked it up in the bottom drawer. So where we are now is that President Obama, when he was a senator, was very much in favor of the Global Tobacco Treaty being ratified. So we're asking everybody to call on the current administration, your elected officials, to say, please send that treaty over to the Senate for ratification. We know it's one of the priorities, but it has not yet been sent to the Foreign Relations Committee. So look forward to questions afterward, and thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. I have to say your talk really hit home. Just a few days ago on the flight from Kabul to Dubai, I met a Dubai-based man originally from Pakistan. He was in Kabul to help set up a cigarette factory in Kabul, Afghanistan. That's the last thing in the world they need. I don't know what company he was working for.